in school, you could say that this state comes or is part and parcel of daydreaming.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about your school, but in my school growing up, I was continuously being smacked over the head and told, stop daydreaming. So now you know why people don't use it, because they've been educated against it. Welcome
to another episode
of Driving to the Res.
Oh boy, did I drive to the res.
With your favorite hosts,
Larry
and Dinelia. Hi, everybody.
What the heck did you give me, honey?
I gave you some elderberry concentrate with
vinegar in here?
Yeah, there's got the apple cider vinegar and ginger and several other herbs. You actually buy it from somebody.
Elderberry fairy.
Yes, elderberry fairy. Yeah,
maybe put that by a PB.
Okay.
It's quite powerful, that drink.
Yes, because you went very populated locations. And
just got back from a long drive.
Yes.
4 or 5 days of driving California and back. That was a long drive to the res.
It was, yes. But today's topic is about psychonautics.
Psychonautics. I mean, I've heard that term, but I had to look it up because I heard it, but I couldn't place it.
Right. Yeah. I'm going to read a little bit of our article, okay?
All right.
I was just reading an excellent article by fellow Substack essayist Saul Luckman on cults when I saw he used the word psychonaut in it. My article today is not about cults.
No.
But about the ins and outs of being a psychonaut.
Okay.
And one of the best protocols I have found to enter altered states of consciousness, which also happens to be drug-free.
Okay.
So, you know, it's like, I heard that too, like, as a teen. I remember hearing that word, and I was like, whoa, that's awesome. It's actually other people on the planet who know to do this, and blah, 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 you know?
Well, but you probably heard it when you were a teen. I heard it when I was, like, 40-ums.
40-something?
40-ums.
Oh.
I didn't hear about it until way late.
Oh, okay. Anyway, it has... People misunderstand it, right? Because when I learned about it and what I understood from it was that it was exploration of the world through altered states of awareness, or expanding your awareness through meditation, music. Oh, yeah.
I think I heard about it from the LSD guys in California.
Yeah, that's it. Went into that. And now anybody who uses that word, I think what they mean is they take drugs.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, that's why I mentioned right at the start, the method I'm going to teach you guys is drug-free and extremely effective, really effective.
Okay.
Saul's article on the topic of cults is great, by the way. And if you're interested in that topic, I would encourage you to go over it and give it a read. The name of the article, which is chapter one of a book about it, is to be mindful while cultivating your interests that you don't find yourself in a cult.
And I kind of dive down a rabbit hole.
Yeah. I kind of wanted to add that bit there because the whole psychonaut culture in the planet
is riddled with cult-ish kind of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
It does tend to. It's like the answer for everything is, well, it's here.
Whatever.
This thing here.
Ayahuasca,
this
is the answer. The ayahuasca will solve all your problems. Or whatever it might be, you know.
It doesn't to say that it might not have solved your individual problem.
Right. But it's not generalized. And also, it's just been taken over with tourism, you know. Psychonaut tourism is different to exploration. And you have to be really, really careful.
It kind of reminds me of the guru who was... he explained that first you have to... In the teaching, you know, you first have to teach this person and make sure that they're a good person.
Yes.
And then you teach them the yoga, which increases their power, because otherwise you're making powerful people who aren't even, you know, prepared to handle or deal with power.
Yes. Like the CD stuff, right?
Yeah, the CDs and whatnot. Yeah, so make a really strong predator.
Right. Or right. Somebody who goes psychotic, right?
Or psychotic, right? Yeah. Or break, yeah.
Yeah.
So similarly, true. Right, the psychonaut process, you know,
mm-hmm.
when you're doing it in the sense of a shamanic journey, you need a shaman who's a guide who's, they're not there because we're going to go make some money off of this idea. It's like, hey.
Oh, I would pay thousands of dollars for a really good shaman who knows what he's doing. I don't care about the money.
I'm not right? talking about that. Is my motivation for the shaman isn't here to make a business, to make money off of psychonautics.
Thousands of people, yeah.
But I'm here as a shaman to journey to this expanded awareness space with those who are in alignment with what I'm here to do, right? And if they pay, that's irrelevant. That's exactly what I'm trying to say.
Right, right. You connecting it with money just puts a whole can of worms out there. You know, oh, like the people who say, oh, you shouldn't charge for that because of spiritual growth, and you shouldn't charge for spiritual growth.
I didn't say
that. Yeah, I know, but that can be interpreted that way.
Right, but
in my opinion, it's like, there are people who don't know what the hell they're doing, whether they say they're an expert or, yeah, they do it just large groups of people are puking away and it's not right. It's very dangerous, in fact, in my opinion, for these people. And it doesn't do anything. I met lots of people who were chronic users of psychedelics and other mind-altering things. And their lives were not improved by it at all. And I've met people who have done it once in their entire life and their life had improved like dramatically. And it all comes down, in my opinion, to the knowledge of the guide, the person, the shaman, whomever is guiding it, who does it properly. They don't recommend it, right? They don't recommend the use of drugs. And they only do it in very occasional times.
Or for a purpose.
And for a very specific purpose.
Right.
Very specific. So that is very different to, yeah, I'm going to take a group of 20 and everybody's going to be lying down on the floor taking the drug at the same time. Oh, no. That's really bad. Don't do that.
Well, we were listening. I know this is a little, it's similar. It's a little bit slightly off, but there was a clinic in Mexico doing ibogaine and toad poison, mm-hmm. remember? And yeah. It was very regimented, rigid, and it took a lot of process to get in it. And the ones who were coming were specifically chosen, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And chosen and doing this journey for the purpose that they had and mm-hmm. the outcome that this fellow experienced. And again, his experience was dramatic, a dramatic improvement for him, mm-hmm. his perceived improvement. But it had only been a few months since it had happened. And yeah. he was right on the edge of, okay, this is the cure for everything.
He was on the edge, but when I was listening to his process and the journey he had to take to even get there,
yep.
it felt to me that there was genuine service providers for this experience of the toad,
yeah,
whatever.
That's what it felt to me, too.
So. I would, you know, it's something that it didn't raise any red flags of exploitation for me, even though he did pay a ton of money, right? But it was well done.
Right.
So very small groups, and each person had a guide, you know.
And it was for a reason.
It was for a reason, a very clear reason, and all the things.
Yeah. So.
Anyways, we're going the exploration.
Slightly off.
Yeah, but I wanted to make that clear because it's very easy to read. Oh, psychonaut is so cool. It means drugs. Let's do drugs, you know, for party. And it's not that. Yeah. I'm going to read a little bit more here. I used to absolutely love that word and the concept behind it. I think that it describes a great interest shared by many of the people I know. A quick internet search showed that the word made its appearance in the 1950s. This does not surprise me, as the exploration of the mind, altered states of awareness, meditation, and use of psychedelics and herbs to induce altered perceptions took off in the West in a big way at that time. The word itself is made up of two ancient Greek words, psyche, which is spirit or soul or mind, and vans nute. I don't know how to pronounce that, but it means sailor or voyager. Exploring the human condition and reality itself through contemplation, meditation, shamanic practices, and mind-altering substances is still popular to this day. However, at some point in the mid to late 60s, it turned from exploring our reality and the human condition to exploring my reality and my life. Right? that was a big thing in the 60s. It took off big. Sad to say the least that such practices would be turned to the singular when it is the singular focus that limits our perception of the true universe.
Mm.
So again, it's like it just got turned into the ego, you know? And it's unfortunate. But anyways, it is not secret that I encourage people to stay away from mind-altering drugs. After decades of observing people use them, I can say that the results in life improvement are few, if any at all, especially by chronic users of these substances. The methodology and services around them are not generally reliable. For example, if you puke during an ayahuasca experience, it means it wasn't done right. To do it right, it takes months to prepare the body, mind, and herbs. It's not about flying to Peru, doing a few meditations with a shaman, and puking for 3 days, then coming home after fighting your shadows or your demons.
I mean, you can have a dramatic experience.
It's very dramatic.
And it can be impactful.
It can be traumatic.
It can be traumatic. It can be impactful. It can be even not unpleasant. Some mm-hmm. people have not unpleasant ones.
Yeah. What I found with the people that I knew that used to do this on a regular basis and the people I knew had only done it once is that if they had to go back or they have felt like they needed to go back and have it again, like pursuing that energy.
I need to go back and meet the whatever, again? The plant. I need to go have another talk with the plant.
It means they didn't do it right. That's how it felt to me, that they hadn't done it right. They needed to look for a new shaman, a different person to guide them through the process because the one they'd used wasn't right. It didn't do the thing that they were after, you know? Unless what they were after is just a lot of these experiences. Like, you know,
I mean,
having traumatic cultural, you know, endorphins, entertaining, dramatic, you know.
Yeah, Joe Rogan, I was listening to Joe Rogan on the ride up and he was talking to Diana Pasulkas, who's the author of Cosmic, the UFO books that we listen to. You know, she's the professor of religious study.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he did an interview with her. Yeah. It's pretty darn good.
Yeah.
And he was a aficionado of DMT.
Okay.
I think they smoke it and it only lasts for 3 or 4 or 5 minutes or something like that.
Mm.
And he never had a bad encounter. He said, but all of his friends who was ever, not all, I don't remember exactly if everyone for every single time, but he said almost everyone has met demons and crap, but he's never had that kind of experience. But he doesn't go in it in that headspace either.
Right.
So he's, even though he's seems to be doing something like that somewhat frequently, he didn't say exactly how many times, he has a process around it that is probably, you know, well generated. I guess it has a good basis to it.
Mm-hmm. Good for what, though?
For him, when he describes it, you know, he's in a position of a million eyes on him, great deal of attention.
Mm-hmm.
So in his words, and the sense that I get is that it helps him to leave that, it continues to keep him in a grounded some state where it's not about him.
Mm.
Not just him, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyways,
it's like the experiences people report and what's happening, it's hard to say, right?
Yeah.
And you remember with somebody like Joe Rogan, we don't know. We don't know. I haven't hung out with him or met him or talked to him since Daily 101.
Right.
But in his podcast, you know, he's a bit gifted at conversing.
He is.
And he's also, you know, gifted at the, remember that show that he did? He was the host of doing all these gross things.
Gross things?
Yeah. I'll remember it later. he stopped doing that because it was dangerous for the people at one point. He's like, no, I'm not doing it no more. Guys, that's over. So he has something to him, you know?
Right. I digress.
Yeah, we digress because that's our nature.
Anyways, complaints aside, being a psychonaut is extremely interesting. Today I want to share my most favorite, effective, and drug-free method of quickly and easily going into an expansive altered state of awareness. I learnt this in a book many years ago. Unfortunately, I don't remember the book, but I do remember that the method was credited to Thomas Edison.
Wow. You want to know something interesting?
Sure.
When I was 20, maybe 21, 19, I was 19.
19?
I might have been 18.
18?
I was in that neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
I got a book on astral projection, astral travel.
Uh-huh.
And this is 1988-ish.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't even a new book. I think it had been out before. And it had this technique in it. I remember it specifically.
Nice. Yes, it's very good for that too, for astral projection. Basically you need to make sure that you have no more than 4 hours of sleep at night, so you will quickly be able to take naps during the day.
Right, you'll be drowsy, right?
Drowsy, yeah.
It's probably best to do this in a nice warm afternoon.
Yeah. During the day, sit up on a comfortable chair with armrests. Make sure your hands are hanging over your armrests and are holding marbles or a metal ball, something that will make a sound. And place cookie sheets under them on the floor. You can imagine, right? What happens, yeah. As you nod off, start going to sleep, your hands will drop the balls or marbles, and the sounds they make will, when they hit the floor, the cookie sheet wakes you up.
You'll be right in that hypnagogic state.
Yeah. Write down everything that is still fresh in your mind from that half-awake state.
Right when you come to, you'll have memories, and just be sure you have a pad of paper by you.
Yeah, or even a recorder or something.
But right in that first, minute or 2 minutes, you'll have it.
Seconds.
If you wait too long, it'll just fade off.
Yeah. Seconds. You can also set yourself up a question or statement such as, I want to see the physical universe correctly perceived. And then close your eyes and sit back on the chair. When the marbles noise wakes you up, record whatever it is you remember as you came back to reality.
Funny enough, in that podcast with Joe Rogan and Diana Pasulkas, they were talking about the fellow Tyler, who, remember, he's the one who took her on to go look at the parts of the UFOs in the desert, when he dug them up and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
He had something like a 44 plus, might have been 18. It's just some number, 44 or so patents. Part of the Space Force and multimillionaire, and is somehow in the Space Force too, right? He's a special fella, right?
Yes,
when you go through the airport, he doesn't have to go through the machines.
Right.
They just Mr. Taylor,
go through
here, right on around.
Yeah.
Doesn't go through. All of his patents, he said, all of his inventions, they came from this hypnagogic state.
Right.
All of them. He says,
Well, Thomas Edison said the same thing. So
it's like, he just taps in and it comes.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's prepared for it to come, and then he writes it.
Yeah.
And then he uses that to create this new whatever it is, the thing that he's doing.
The interests,
It's a powerful process, and at the same time, it's shared and reported, and here we're talking about it ourselves, and yet how many people apply it?
How many people apply it? I don't know how many people know about it. Right?
Well, Thomas Edison wrote about it, and Joe Rogan talked about it, and Diana Pasulkas put it in her book, and she talked about it.
Oh, this
method?
This
is heard by millions of people.
This method?
Using the hypnagogic state, not necessarily this method.
Oh, right, yes.
I heard about this method, like I said, when
now
I was
18. Yeah.
And this state...
In fact, I'll tell you one thing. So in school... You could say that the state comes or is part and parcel of daydreaming.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about your school, but in my school growing up, I was continuously being smacked over the head and told, stop daydreaming. So now you know why people don't use it, because they've been educated against it. Don't go there. Don't do that. You know? And it's like, how many times did you nod off in school? You know, like, I have to wake up.
Well, a lot, because I'd read books all night.
There you go. Right. That probably saved you.
Reading the books.
Mm-hmm. And nodding off in school.
Yeah. Well, I was interested in school too, though.
Mm-hmm. Me too. I was very interested.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I did daydream quite a lot. But I still got A's in class, so I didn't have a problem with any of that. But I did come up with some pretty good ideas.
There you go. What did you ever do with those ideas?
I called an engineer on one of them to try and get him to help me build it, because I had the concept and the idea, and I knew how to make it work, but I didn't know how to build it.
What did the engineer do?
He said, oh, that's a cool idea. I'll have to think about it.
And that's the end of that?
Yeah.
Did you patent it?
No, but everyone has them now.
Oh, so he patented it.
No, he didn't patent it. I don't remember who first. I think Sony came out with the first version.
Oh, boy.
His wireless headphones.
All right. All right. So you do this, okay? You do this every day. Rinse and repeat. Give yourself a month for this, because people sometimes expect instant results that are really amazing. That can happen. That can happen. But more likely for the rest of us, it's like you have to practice until it's perfect. And obviously take longer sleep periods when you need them during the night to keep you healthy. My suggestion would be to start with one day per week and build to around 4 days out of seven if your work schedule and lifestyle allows it. And I look forward to hearing what you get.
Yes. Can you think of any questions for people to enter into it with? Like,
yeah, the one that I thought.
Or...
Yeah, so the one that I said, where's that sentence? I want to see the physical universe correctly perceived, right?
I want to see it. I want to know it. I want to
see it.
Be aware.
Oh, you could smell it.
I want to smell it.
Whatever it is that you're interested in, right?
I'm just trying to get the right set of words, the right sentence that, like, I go, oh, I can bite that one.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to know how to make a perfect chicken pot pie.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be like huge. Start with something that's relatable. Right.
What secret ingredient can I add to my chicken pot pie that boosts it over the top?
Yeah, for example.
For example?
Yeah.
Okay. How about a question that you have, like, should I take this job or not?
But should I? You'd have to tweak the coin quite a bit, because should I take this job, yes or no, according to what? Right? Will it make your dad happy? Will it increase your income? Will it make your marriage better? You know, is it related to any of those at all? So I think those generalized ones are a little bit harder.
A little bit harder, because you can get a feeling of yes, but based on your programs, that might not be in your best interest.
Yeah.
Or, it's a little harder.
Yeah, it makes it really hard. Or if it's like you're running a lot of fear around it, when you come out of, you're going to that expanded awareness state, you're going to the fear spots of the universe, and you see horrible things happening because you're fear-based, you know? So I think that decision-making, there's other exercises that I much prefer, like the ones that I teach on the mining timelines.
Yeah, right? That sounds more handy.
Yeah, the goal-setting exercises from the Ascension 101 course. So making decisions, I think, have other tools that are better. I think that the exploration of the universe and the human condition is done really well with these other methods.
So in the example of Tyler, he came up with 44 inventions, right?
Mm-hmm.
From this state. I don't know how he entered or accessed, but how do you think someone might get this inspiration?
Well,
what will be the driver? How do they enter into it? Do you come in with a, like, I have an idea for headphones, but I don't know, or it's like,
Well, he's engineerly minded and trained, so.
Right, so
he's already set for where he'll go when he's in an older state of awareness.
Would it do any good to tell him how to build a screen tablet for out of clay because he knows electronics or something? Or, you know, for us,
if
we don't have any training, the data isn't going to have a place to, like, latch on.
Exactly. Or the interest. You wouldn't go there. Even. When you're in that state, your ego goes away.
So might you enter to use it to, like, be inspired for a book to write? Topic?
Absolutely,
a
yeah.
Topic for a
if
book?
You're, yeah, so if you're a writer, absolutely. Or if you're a painter, a painting. Or if you're a musician, some music.
Yeah.
Right? Or if you're a healer, you can look at your patients while you're there.
Oh, yeah. Can right? you give me some insight into this patient's
right. I want to see who's going to give you. Right. Don't give it away, because that already you're giving your authority away and you're inviting entities in that will perceive you, but you will perceive as authorities. So it's not give me. I want to see what helps this patient the best to recover from XYZ condition. And then you do the exercise and then you write down, even if it doesn't make sense when you start coming back, you know. I saw an iron ball on top of a tree. I write it all down, you know. And eventually it's going to make sense. We don't know.
Obviously, Edison did it to invent a lot of things too, right?
Sorry?
Edison must have used it to invent things.
Yeah, that's where the story goes, that I learned anyway. Just back in the day.
Well, obviously he's a prolific inventor. And so it's like as an inventor entering into that state, it was like awesome. As a writer entering into that state or as a whatever, right?
Yes.
So how do we define ourselves? I think that's almost the question. If you're going to apply this state and this exercise and this practice for a month, how do you think? Well, I guess we would say we are light workers.
Right? Yeah.
To some degree.
Yeah.
And we have a prime purpose, right?
Yes.
To be our natural frequency, have that frequency reflected back to us in our experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And so we might enter into that state to be in our natural frequency.
Yeah, so that would work.
My intention would be to sit in my highest, in my natural frequency. Is that the right words?
Yeah, I would say that's
my natural frequency. I'm just here to sit in my natural frequency.
Could do that, yeah.
And let's see what happens. And then when the balls drop, what happens?
Yeah,
what's there? What is there to write? You might find yourself inspired to write something.
Mm-hmm.
It may help induce that natural frequency in others. It may help induce that natural frequency in those around you, your pets, whatever.
Or you might actually invent a free energy device.
You might invent a free energy device. Okay.
Right. We don't know, because each person is so different.
Right. I suppose the key is going to be to see, you know, is there any danger to this?
I haven't seen it. Well, lack of sleep, if you push it too hard. And you don't get enough sleep, then you can have car accidents and whatnot, right? And get grumpy
Hours of sleep. If we went to bed at midnight, we have to get up 4 in the morning.
Yes.
We get up, go to bed at 2 in the morning, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah,
still too early. So we have to stay up till 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
4, 5, 6, 7.
There you go.
But if we want to sleep till 8, we have to stay up till 4.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know what, though?
I don't know if that's going to work for us.
Do you remember the last time you did that?
The last time I stayed up till 4?
You slept very little for many years.
Fishing?
When you're babies, right?
Yeah, when you have babies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's when I did it. I used it a lot when my babies were young, newborn and stuff. Yeah. I used this method a lot. It was great. It's like the environment gives it to you, man. You're not getting any sleep in your all day. You want to nap. So I did it a lot. I did it for years. I had both children. So, you know, whenever one was born, before they had a full night's sleep, that's what I would do.
Okay.
Yeah. So life circumstances, you know, you have to take this into consideration.
Right.
Be an adult about it. You're not a kid.
Right. I mean, if you were going to go to Peru and take ayahuasca, and now we're just saying, you know, don't sleep very much for a night and use some marbles. I mean, that's...
It's not as romantic.
You're not talking a lot of extreme something. It's just like a night or two, once or twice a week, give it a try. Yeah. Do some marbles on a chair when you're sleeping in the afternoon. Yeah. It's not a big ask, I guess.
Yeah. And if you do want to go to Peru and have ayahuasca... you do this first. But also, I would highly suggest that you have a very clear intent on what you want to achieve, not just go there like, I wonder what's going to happen, you know? Because that's like the example I always give, going to a really bad area in New York, or you live there and you open your doors and windows and say, anybody who wants to come in here, you know? It's not a good plan. It's not street smart. Have a very good plan of what you want to explore during that experience. And if the person that you're going with doesn't give you 3 months to prepare your body, then look for one that does.
Okay. Well, I wonder if anyone in our esteemed second hour panel has explored these things.
The marbles or the...
The marbles or the ayahuascas or the LSDs or the whatevers.
Yeah. I've done the ayahuasca one. That was like an experience.
I did the LSD one.
Yeah, it was an experience and a half. Well, I don't know how about you. You don't think you prepared very well.
Oh, I prepared my entire life up until that day.
Really? You wanted to do it really bad? Is that what you mean by preparing?
Oh.
Did you research it? What did you do?
Well, in my experience, I had already, when I was a child, experienced it but didn't know it.
So they gave you LSD as a child?
I don't know. Maybe mushrooms, maybe LSD. I don't know. Somehow or other, I felt like the experience was one that I'd already had. It's like the entire experience was a deja vu. Uh-huh. I knew this. I knew this. I knew this. I knew this. It's like, oh, I know about that. I knew about that too. How did I know all this stuff? I don't understand. How is this all already known to me?
Mm, interesting.
So I felt like I was already ready for it. And my guide at the time, who would be what you would consider a very experienced shaman.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, when LSD first came out in Santa Cruz, he was the tip of the spear. And he must have had, he said he couldn't count how many times, but probably over 200 times.
What?
He'd used acid. And he was an acid guide. He knew how to guide you to have an experience, whatever the experiences are.
Uh-huh.
And so in the case of his guidings, you know, they were like, you make your hand gets long, your fingers grow this long, and which kind of clipped me in, tuned me in that my dad might have actually been involved in it, although he won't admit it.
He's admitted it since.
He said, don't do any Jesus trips. I think they have Jesus some of the ones you go and meet Jesus Christ or Jesus sits there and you can talk to Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's all like focus, you know, to get person's focus into a story and then in the story a thing happens.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of like the guided thing. So he knew some of those things, but then I just went off on my own. And you remember on my first regression?
Yes.
Well, that happened.
Yeah.
The ship came. The wood of the roof split apart.
Yeah.
It was like a little slatty roof and the wood split apart and the ship was right there and I could see it.
Wow.
And it was a neat ship, let me tell you. Plus the trees. So one of the things that was funny about myself is that I have really bad vision. My vision's good nearsighted, but far sighted, I can't see very good. And it was legally blind.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look at a tree, entire life, it was a mush of leaves, you know?
Yeah, like green mush.
It's green mush. That's what trees look like.
Green clouds.
Yeah, I didn't think that's just the way they look.
Yeah.
I never knew any different.
Yeah.
Sure, I knew that those were leaves, but leaves look like mush from far away.
Yeah.
And one day I got glasses and I put glasses on. The first time I was like, holy crap, trees have leaves.
They're not just clouds.
It's not just a cloud. Because you see the pictures of the clouds.
The clouds.
Yeah, it's just the cloud.
Those are all short-sighted people who drew those. Huh?
Yeah, it must have been. So it turns out LSD in this particular case is glasses for a blind person because every one of those leaves was alive.
Yeah.
Not just there was a bunch of leaves, but that all of those leaves were alive and they were talking and they had a communication. Mm-hmm. It was pretty far out. I got to say it changed how I looked at everything forevermore.
Hmm. Did it improve your life?
Well, I don't know because I don't have anything to compare it to.
That before and after.
What yardstick will we measure improved life with?
You know, it's like, were you happier after than before? More able in life than before? more capable in life than before.
I was definitely more open-minded and broad-minded. And it was a physical experience of the imagined reality.
Mm-hmm.
So it made it real. And because it made it real, then it, I think it opened up my, I was open to there was more to life than wake up in the morning, you go to school, and you need to get an A. And if you get A's, then you go to the next thing where you got to get some more A's. And when you get all those A's, then you get a job thing. It moved life away from the routine that was designed for me to, there's more here than just that. Mm. What's here for? Here's maybe there's more to trees than a cloud of leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And there might actually be something to UFOs. You maybe better look, you know?
Yeah.
So it did expand my experience of reality.
That's good.
How about you?
Overall, I think that would be considered a properly guided experience, right?
Well, yeah, he was definitely expert at it.
Yeah.
And like I said, at some point in the journey, I no longer needed a guide. I didn't want a guide. And I went to explore the things that interested I actually you. Were interested in. Yeah. And one of them was music, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I could see music go through the wires.
Nice.
So it was like a synthesia. They have a S word. Synesthesia, where yes. colors have taste.
Yeah.
In this case, sound had
shape,
light and shape.
Mm.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting. And for you?
The ayahuasca thing?
Yeah.
Well, I had a couple of things. Many years ago, I've told this story many times, actually. It was one of them was mushrooms and the other one was ayahuasca.
Yes.
The mushroom was, it's like I perceived, I saw one of my guys or ancestors. I thought she was Mapuche, but she might have been gypsies. They're very similarly dressed, you know, as ancestries go. And she came up to me. She was a very small lady, dark skinned, no teeth. And the whole dress, you know, I recognized as Mapuche. And she looked at me and she said, mushrooms. And I looked at her back and I said, there's no way I'm going to put chemicals in my body. My body's my temple. I'm not going to put any chemicals in it. That's not going to happen. Right? And she just smiled and went away. And then the next week she comes back, does the same thing, looks at me and says, mushrooms. And I'm like, not going to happen, not happening. I'm sorry, not going to happen. And this went on for weeks, maybe months. And at one point I had an injured back. And every morning I would wake up with a massive pain in my back and I would process it. I would allow it to grow and everything. And then it would dissipate enough so that I could function during the day. It was chronic pain. But I was used to it. It's like I could function very well. This day, it was in really intense when I woke up. I did the process and it didn't work. In fact, it got worse and worse and worse. It got so bad that I called my husband at the time and told him I need to go to hospital, and I never go to hospital. Not only that, but my body started going into shock. And by the time we got to the hospital, my body was in shock, and there was a group of nurses coming out of the hospital, saw me, and they all went into like extreme emergency mode and put me in one of those
gurneys
and rushed me inside through the ER part right to the back. And they started trying to they treated the shock. And then they started trying to treat the pain. And they gave me all sorts of chemicals. I'm a person who takes an aspirin and I'm knocked out. But they were giving me morphine and all sorts of stuff. Nothing was doing it. Nothing. And around 4 o'clock in the morning, they bring in some sort of drug. They put it into the IV thing and the pain goes away. And I feel like a rush, you know, like what just happened? And the lady, my ancestor, comes in right in front of me, standing there in front of this hospital bed, looks at me and goes, mushrooms. Like, what? And I look at the nurse who was putting the medicine in and I said, what is that? What did you just give me? And she said, oh, it's a natural, it's a very powerful blah, blah, blah. It's a derivative of a mushroom. And I'm like, OMG. Okay. And then I got the big download that this ancestry lineage wanted me to get. And it was all about, you know, it was very personal about connecting with Gaia and all the creatures. And I got a big knowledge about the light dark paradigm and the separation of women and men and why everybody's afraid of powerful women. How did the split like to the light dark happen and was engineered and a lot of stuff, right? I wrote all about it. It's in an article in AneliaBenz.com. And I thought, okay, yeah, lesson learned. You know, if she comes along and tells me to do something, I'm going to freaking do it. I'm not going through this again. I'm not going to end up in the ER with that amount of pain and get my body into shock and nearly die and whatever, right? That's not going to happen again. Many years later, she appears again and I go, oh, shit. What now? And she goes, ayahuasca. Okay, then. Yes, I'm going to figure it out.
Learn it.
Yes, I read books. I read so researched the internet. I scanned the world for a shaman that could hold my energy. Because when you go and look for a shaman, it has to be your frequency or higher for them to be able to hold your energy. I couldn't find one. So I thought, I'm screwed, you know? So I started researching some more. And then I tapped into the plant itself, the plants, because it's more than one. And I figured out where to get the herbs in the United States. They were sold as dyes, cloth dyes. Anyways, I got the herbs. And when I got them in the mail, I held the bag. And the bag of herbs, the herbs told me to hang them in my favorite tree out in the yard. So I said, okay. So in the bag itself, I took him outside. I went to my favorite tree and I hung them there. And then it's like I waited for weeks and weeks and weeks. And at the time, also another information about proteins and fats and carbs and all that came in and how to prepare your body to be healthy and receptive to the experience. So that was weeks of preparation on my body. And one day I wake up and the herbs are telling me we're ready. So I go, okay. So I get them off the tree and I start cooking them. And the cooking part is you have to be in the right spot, mind-wise, you know, like frequency-wise, and your environment has to be right. So that took me, again, quite a while because I lived with my family, my husband and children. So there, like, I had to take my time when putting it in there, you know, and then I would do, like, at some point I froze it so that because I didn't, things went a little bit wild at home. So I froze it for a while and then thawed them again and continued, just making it sure it was right, done right. And then I started, as I was hearing these instructions, I would research them. I would go into the internet and say, is this accurate? And sure enough, there was information out there of how to do this the way that it's done to have the best highest frequency result with it. And then it was ready. So I prepared myself and it was ready the night before. And then the morning I did all the things and the foods and stuff that you need to take. And I took the liquid and it's disgusting. It's really gross. I took the liquid and I waited. And then I saw coming towards me this horrific creature, a really nasty, scary creature. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. Right? That's a very scary looking thing, you know, and I smiled at it and I went to touch it because I was very curious. And as I went to touch it, it turned into the most beautiful being I had ever seen. And it was Gaia, wow, or the lady in the shape of the lady of the forest.
Right.
I'm like, why did you do that? You know, why did you come in? It's just like, I didn't do it. That's the filter of the human collective demonizing nature, you know?
That happens too.
Yeah. And then the connection with the plants and Gaia itself, which I needed because I was very disconnected. Mm-hmm. Right. So that was very clear to me. I was just following guidance all the time. And it was, I understood. It wasn't a big deal. I mean, it lasted only a few minutes. And even though I keep, like, continue taking the thing, nothing else happened, right? It was done. And the herbs were done. So then I stopped, you know. Eventually I realized it doesn't matter. I can take this for 3 days and it's not going to do anything else. So I just kept the rest because I'd done a lot of the liquid. I kept that in the freezer in case in the future anybody...
You got asked again.
Yeah. But also if anybody else wanted to be guided through that, that I knew, that I trusted, somebody who I knew would be okay with doing the whole preparation and everything. Nobody came. And eventually I planted it. I put it in the ground and it dissolved back into earth. So it's like, I'm not saying that these experiences shouldn't be done with herbs or mushrooms or toads or cacti or whatever, spiders. I'm not saying don't. I'm saying you need to have clarity. You need to know what you're doing. You need to get a good plan in there, your belt, research it really well. And if you do find a guide, find one that, or an organization, find one that they know what they're doing. Right? And yeah, it's not just, yeah, turn up and we'll give you this liquid and everything will be great. If somebody tells you that, don't believe it, because it's not true. That's just, go party, you know, just go to a party and buy some drugs if you're going to do that, you know?
Okay.
Because a lot of people take LSD, a lot of people take drugs or mushrooms or whatever in parties, right? And that's what it is. I knew a guy in Seville who would do mushrooms, and at one point he did so much mushroom that he ended up in a psych ward. And I met him after he came out of the psych ward, and he was covered in demons. He was so badly possessed. It was insane. That's now, like, true. Okay. So it's not just the drug, you know?
Right, right. And, you know, it's worth saying that since that one time, I haven't been tempted, desired, or needed, or wished, or done ever that ever again. Right?
Me neither.
It's like, okay, got it's it. Done. It was like, got it. I was a... closed off really hard. I couldn't see. Nothing was interesting. Nothing outside of, you know, getting a letter grade A was interesting, or bicycling.
Yeah.
It's like a very small world, very limited perspective. And that, I don't think, you know, when I reflect on it, it wasn't that afterward everything got better. It's like afterward, there was way too much world.
Mm.
So I became, I would say,
trying to shut it off.
And that's, I don't know that I would say shut off. I was just like, the palette of planet became 7,000 things instead of two.
Mm.
And not all of them were necessarily high frequency choices. I didn't really have a high frequency after guide.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay, that sounds good. This looks good. This looks good. I'll do this too. I'll skip that. And A's, who needs A's? I don't even need school.
Right.
College? Ah, don't worry about that. So, yeah, it made the palette big.
Yeah.
And it's taken quite a long time to narrow the palette back down to, you know,
conscious and
what
adult
has
decisions
to do with my high frequency, my true frequency, my natural, who I am.
Yeah.
So, would have been better with a proper guide.
I think so too. Yeah.
But I still didn't do it again.
Yeah. Which is a good sign when I see people who've done it once and then they're just like, yeah, that was it. You know, I don't need it. That's, to me, that's a good sign.
Yeah. And one thing I might add is the sleeping for 4 hours and then waiting until the afternoon to do this. I think that it's possible to set the alarm for 4 in the morning and get up.
And then sit up. And
then sit in the chair with the marbles at 4 or 5. You don't have to, like, wait and then do it like in the morning. You just like...
Absolutely.
I mean, do it, go through a cycle or two, record whatever you have, and then you can go back to bed even.
That's a great method. Yeah, totally.
So it doesn't mess up your entire day.
Good plan. Good plan.
Okay. Let's give it a try. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
I think we're done.
Yes.
Oh.
What?
We'll see you on the second. Yeah, there is a second half to this.
Yes. Yes. We have a panelists. We're going to explore this way more with all of their experiences too.
Right. Expert panel.
Yes.
Okay. See you in the second hour. You'll figure out where to find it.
At Subscribestar or Walk With Me Now.
Or Walk With Me Now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Bye, honey. Love you.
when I was late teens, early 20s, I think, it was like getting pulled into the raising the frequency, the time vibration of the planet. And one of the questions I had, well, how can I visualize this in a way that I can understand it? In my small self, which is where I'm functioning from most of the day, every day, especially in the situations I was at the time, which was absolutely definitely very small self, very, very low frequency. And what the visualization that came up for me was I saw the human collective as a figure in the lotus position floating in space. And it was a figure made of almost like water. So it was very, very plainly a human in a lotus position made of water. And inside that was all of the human experience in our paradigm. So all of it happening like in real time. And when I saw it, the first time I saw it all those years back, because I'm turning 58 this year. So when I saw it all those years back in my early 20s, that figure was asleep. And even though it was in a meditative state, position, it was not enough. It was asleep, basically. And what I did for many years was to visualize that figure and like imagine it lighting up and waking up.